Hi and welcome to Matrix Moments. This is Saloni, and in today's episode, we're going to be talking about performance management systems and HR best practices for early stage startups. We work closely with founders in this area and have tried to summarize some of the key learnings from our experience. Through this episode, you will learn more about the various performance management and incentive structures that are adopted by founders, how the company culture plays an instrumental role in this, how one can go about setting up an effective performance management system without over-engineering the process, as well as the recommended tools and softwares that can be leveraged. We also cover incentive structures vis-a-vis your company stage and much more. Tune in.
Thank you, Rajinder, for being a part of this episode along with me. Indeed, a pleasure to be on my first Matrix Moment episode, and especially on a topic that is professionally very close to my heart, given my background of 11 odd years in multiple facets of human resources. In my role as a VP Human Capital at Matrix Partners, I work very closely with founders to support them in building the core founding team. And one key trend that stands out is that startups tend to generally focus more on talent acquisition versus the other aspect of human resources early in their journey. But there are very simple HR practices that one can easily adopt even at a very early stage. So knowing what we know, post seeing so many businesses scale up and some scale down too, some of the best HR practices one can easily adopt in a company's evolution stage would be hiring and onboarding, organization culture, performance management and incentive systems, organization design, talent management and succession planning, and employer branding. We've done previous podcasts on hiring and onboarding, and one can refer to Extreme Hiring by Vikram and Extreme Referencing by Tarun. We've done one podcast on crafting your company culture with Agnish, Ahana Gautam, and Rajinder. So in my role at Matrix, in addition to helping founders identify and hire great talent, I do get pulled into some of these topics very frequently. So it is crucial, I believe, to look at human capital function holistically versus very purely from a talent acquisition perspective. Even though a team at an early stage might not have a very dedicated HR professional on board. And generally, we do advise companies to have a dedicated HR professional in place as they approach a Series B stage, if not already done at a Series A stage. So today in this podcast, we're going to deep dive on the topic of performance management and incentive system. We'll be hearing more from Rajinder, you know, on some of the views he has on this topic.
No, Rupali, thank you. First of all, thank you for seeding the thought that we do this, and you know, for all the content that you put together on this as well. It certainly helped me collect my thoughts as I was, you know, preparing for this. Performance management, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. It's one of those topics which, you know, tends to get ignored in the first year, maybe first 2 years of a company's journey. But it is supremely crucial at a very early stage. I think there is no doubt that, you know, the founder, you know, is often, you know, building their company either for the first time or they're, you know, building towards their vision, this new project or vision that they have. But, you know, once they grow beyond a, you know, organization size of, you know, call it 30 or 40, they don't necessarily know what everyone in their team is, you know, doing on a day-to-day basis, right? They can't maintain kind of direct oversight over, you know, the execution activities of each team member. And so it becomes super important. I think we generally at Matrix, we invest in, you know, seed Series A and occasionally Series B companies as well. And so we are often investing in companies where, you know, the team strength is, call it, you know, somewhere around that mark, right? 20, 30, 40 people. And that's kind of the place where, you know, founders know what everyone is doing. Once you get to a scale of, you know, managing, you know, 100 plus employees, it becomes practically impossible, right? And then there's multiple, you know, management layers also that get set up. There's possibly a VP layer, there's possibly a, you know, manager layer. And so all the more important for a performance management system to be put in place. I think the other point that I wanted to, you know, kind of bring up is that, you know, once you start adding, you know, key hires, both, you know, laterally, both, you know, freshers, whatever it is, many people are still, you know, very early in either the, you know, their professional careers or, you know, in their, you know, startup journey, right? So they don't necessarily know how startups are built. And I think it's very important for a founder who has a vision and who's, you know, constantly thinking about, you know, how do I get to product market fit? How do I drive execution and faster execution to win against, you know, my competitors? it's very important for, you know, implementing some version of a performance management system to drive that execution. Otherwise, you know, people will end up working at, you know, on different kind of tracks, and people are, you know, not necessarily aligned and working on, you know, the key initiatives of the company. You know, that feedback loop that, you know, could take, you know, weeks or months ends up taking, you know, quarters or years. And that's the difference between, you know, life and death for a startup, right? You need to accelerate the execution journey. So I think it's, you know, just absolutely imperative that a performance management system is put into place right up front and very early. You cannot scale. You cannot drive execution if you don't have it in place. I think another, you know, kind of unsaid topic is, you know, performance management and, you know, culture somewhere also do intersect, right? I mean, there's, you know, I'll just, you know, put it out there and say, you know, when you're building your team for the first time, you're trying to add people to the team who are obviously high performers, but also people who fit the culture. And if I just put, you know, people on a simple, you know, 2x2 and you say, you know, high performance, great fit for the culture. I mean, these are the people you want to just retain, incentivize, you know, somehow make sure that they, you know, stay committed to the company's purpose. There may be people who, you know, don't perform and who don't fit the culture. I think the answer there also is very clear, right? That these people just don't belong. I think it's the other two quadrants that are frankly interesting, right? Sometimes, you know, you have great performers, but people who just don't fit the culture. And I think those are the, you know, people that you have to really think hard about, right? Because my personal bias, and I think, you know, I've heard, you know, other colleagues at Matrix also echo this, you know, those people, I believe, don't fit in your company because, you know, they may be, you know, great performers in the short term, but long term, they will not, you know, be value additive to the company because they just don't fit the culture. Mm-hmm. And then there are the people who perhaps aren't performing as, you know, up to the expectations that you may have had, but who are great culture fits. I think there, I think the question to be thought through is, you know, hey, you know, is there something about the role that they're currently in and the, you know, targets that they are driving towards that, you know, maybe they don't have specific capability around that particular role. So where can you actually plug them into, you know, another function within the company to make sure that the overall company execution effectiveness continues? Because they're a great cultural fit. You know, performance is somewhere, you know, close to the mark, maybe just short of the mark, but maybe it could actually inflect if they played a slightly different role. So I do think that when you're, you know, building this company, getting to a few hundred people in your, you know, org, you know, performance management and culture go hand in hand, right? You have to measure both. It's very easy for us to sit and say, hey, you know, this person fits the culture, I mean, because of, you know, whatever reasons. But then there's also, it's also important to, you know, objectively measure performance. And if you don't have clear objectives that you've set, measurable outcomes that you can, you know, measure on a regular basis, then I don't see how you scale.
Thank you, Rajinder. That's very, very helpful. I think I'm sold if I was a founder. But I think as a recruiter also, I know how difficult it is to get a high performer on board, right? And I think that just half the battle won. If you're not able to engage and retain them, I think the problem sustains. I would want to quote a 2016 publication by PwC, and I think that would give us another reason to go for PMS would be, it showed very clearly that the perceived effectiveness of performance management system by your employee and the employer itself is very high when the company is small in size. So in fact, on a scale of 1 to 4, where 4 is highly effective, the perceived effectiveness towards PMS is as high as 3.43 if the company size is less than 1,000 employees. And naturally enough, it goes down as the number of employee goes up, right? So another reason
that that makes perfect sense, right? Yes, the smaller the company, the more important it is to make sure that everyone is kind of, you know, driving towards the same objectives. Because it's not like a large, you know, multinational where there's, you know, enough companies, enough functions, etc. So fully agree with you.
Agree. But on the same topic, what are the no-brainers must-dos?
Yeah. No, so I think, you know, let's set theory aside. I think, you know, if you just put it into basics, right? First and foremost, I think it starts from the top. I think every founder should have a fixed and a variable comp structure for themselves as well. And I know it's counterintuitive, but I can't recommend it highly enough. It's very hard for a founder to implement a performance management system in their own company if they don't measure themselves also in some objective way against that same system. Mm-hmm. Okay. The second thing is, I think every hire that you make, see, you know, founders are trying to hire, you know, in a competitive talent market, right? I think every, you know, new hire always expects, you know, there to be some, you know, carrot, right? You know, I need to see, you know, some version of a, either you're meeting my compensation or you're, you know, beating my current compensation through some version of an incentive, right? So I just think every key hire should have anywhere between 20 to 50% of their CTC coming through variable pay. And this is separate from ESOP, right? The more senior you go, the variable pay obviously will end up being higher. But even at a junior level, I think it is just absolutely imperative for people to be aligned through variable pay. And I think the rules for this are actually very, very simple, right? First and foremost is, you know, the variable pay has to be something that is measurable. It has to be something that is, you know, paid out on the basis of some factor that is A, measurable, B, something that is really objective, right? It can't be something that you and I disagree on. And then the third is, you know, I think the best companies, and especially those that are in the tech industry, you know, I think it's very possible to make these real time. I mean, imagine like, you know, if you had a salesperson or, a BD person actually, you know, knowing where they stand almost on a, you know, weekly, if not daily basis, you know, this is something that they probably know, right? These are how many, you know, customers I've onboarded. These are how much supply I've onboarded. You know, you should absolutely be able to measure it and be able to tell people on a real-time basis where they stand. Okay. I think the second thing you need to think through is, you know, obviously there are some functions which where things are, you know, measurable, more measurable than others in terms of output. And there are some functions which are more measurable in terms of input, right? Mm. But I think both of these need to be managed in more or less the same way, right? Outputs can be measured, inputs can also be measured. Outputs can also be real-time, inputs can also be more or less managed real-time. Right. So I don't think the rules change depending on, you know, you can say, hey, you know, my sales and BD function, you know, is, you know, you can measure output, but you know, what about my tech product function? Right? Mm-hmm. I think tech product can be, you know, measured as well. There's clear inputs which drive, you know, its product releases, its, you know, version, you know, changes, etc., which is very, very easy to measure, right? I think the other, you know, thing to think through is, you know, how should individual contributors be, you know, managed differently from, say, managers? And here I would, you know, lean on, you know, some things that we've learned from, you know, some of the founders that we work with. And I've had the, you know, good fortune of working with RC, Shruchi, Bhuvan, Vasant, Nitin and others at Off Business. I think, you know, fantastic team. I think this is one insight I picked up from them, which is, you know, individual contributors, actually, you just need to manage them differently. They can't have 10 metrics they're chasing, right? They're more junior in your company, typically. They have less experience. They need to have ideally one metric. Maybe two, right? But max, I think, and they generally feel somewhat, ill at ease, let's just call it, if they don't know where they stand almost on an every quarter basis, right? So this whole notion that, you know what, we will do, you know, reviews maybe once a year, we will kind of decide, you know, where your performance stands at the end of the year. I think, you know, you can absolutely measure it every quarter. You can maybe even measure it every month. I mean, if with tech, you can actually probably measure it every day, right? So why wait until the end of the year to let, you know, pay people out and give them that satisfaction? You know what, you did X, you got Y, especially at an individual contributor level, right? And then I think the third thing is, you know, there should only be, you know, metrics that, you know, are sanity metrics, right? No vanity metrics. There's no reason to like reward people on GMV, right? I think because GMV can be artificially inflated by, you know, discounts, right? So it's much more important than to, you know, kind of set some version of a sanity metric. Maybe for some companies that's gross margin, maybe for some companies that's contribution margin. I think pick a sanity metric, pick, you know, very few metrics that you pay out on for an individual contributor. The second stakeholder in the system is the manager, right? I mean, and of course there are cascading levels of managers. I think the simple insight here again that I picked up from them is that managers in performance should not be only a summation of the people's that they manage and their performance, right? Every manager should actually have an individual set of targets as well. And the reason for this is two, right? One is, you know, you have to be able to walk the talk, right? You can't just be managing, you know, a team and expecting them to deliver for you when you're not out there yourself in the market, you know, interacting with customers, you know, selling or, you know, building, you know, in the case of tech. So there's just no way that a manager can command the, you know, respect of their team without actually being out there and working as well. So there has to be an individual target for a manager. And then the second is a team target, right? Which is some version of a summation of the team that they manage. Not, you can figure out whether the weightage should be 50-50, 40-60, 30-70. I think every company can pick, you know, something different. But, you know, managers absolutely should have an individual target and should also have a team target. And ideally, all of these should be cascading, right? In the sense that, you know, it can't be that the team's targets are orthogonal or very different from what the manager's targets are, because then there is clearly, you know, overall lack of alignment, which will roll up. The next set of, you know, insights I picked up was, you know, how do you actually decide what the payout is, right? Which is, you know, let's say you've kind of set some version of a metric for me. Maybe, you know, my metric is, you know, number of customers acquired, right? So there was an expectation set at the start of the year. This is, you know, our growth target. This is what it translates to in terms of, you know, new customers that we acquire. How do you pay out, right? I think here the answer is very simple, because the more complicated you make it, the more that people don't understand, right? So if you tell someone you have, you know, achieved, you know, 17.5% above your target and therefore X, you know, it just doesn't make sense. Right? So I would say set up simple bands. Okay. I would say just keep a simple ABC kind of a band, you know, exceeds expectation, meets expectation, below expectations. And, you know, decide what that band is, right? Maybe it's plus or minus 20%, maybe it's plus or minus 25%. Kind of depends on, you know, what the company is, what stage it is. I would say, you know, one more choice for you is, you know, should the payout happen only on the basis of, you know, these ABC bands, or should it also somewhere link back to the earlier point that we made, which was around culture, right? Which is, you know, should an individual only optimize for their performance, or should they also optimize for their, you know, peers and their, you know, colleagues' performance? And I think there the, you know, insight was very simple, that if it's a, you know, if you only reward individual performance, then it ends up being a rat race, right? And then you're kind of at the average. Like, you cannot ever raise the average level of performance of the entire company, because, you know, basically everyone is kind of somewhere competing with each other, right? So I think there is a there is an importance for, you know, seeing whether an individual is actually not only able to raise their performance, but also raise, you know, the performance of someone else. Not just in a managerial capacity, but say in a lateral capacity, same, you know, some version of a, you know, cross-functional capacity. I think it's supremely important. So think about whether you want to add, you know, some kicker for how people are able to, you know, raise collective performance, because then you can keep raising the overall bar, right? I've gone on for a long while, so I'm going to pause, but maybe the last point I'll make is, I think in general, the principle of under-promise, over-deliver is great. So I think the other thing that I've heard from some companies, I won't reference who, is that it's not just about, you know, fixed and variable compensation. It's perfectly okay to actually set up an incentive system even on top of that. So that, you know, for truly high performers, see that if they're able to drive, you know, certain outcomes, then their payout actually links very closely to the overall company performance. So take, for example, let's say it's some version of a hyperlocal business, right? And let's say you are the, you know, manager for a city manager, right? Now, if your business was supposed to be, call it a, you know, $10 million business at a, you know, gross level, and let's say a, you know, $1.5 million business at the, you know, gross margin level, but you've kind of hit it out of the park, and that 10 million business is, you know, it's not even like 10 or 12 or 13 or 15, but you've gone and built something like much larger, like say 30, 40, right? I mean, absolutely, there should be a clear incentive payout. I mean, it's a no-brainer, right? Such an individual should, you know, it shouldn't just be that, you know, hey, this person has done well, so, you know, let's promote them. It should be, you know, well and beyond, right? Because that person has clearly contributed to the company's success materially. That company could go on to raise, you know, the next round of financing well in advance of the earlier plans. They may have built, you know, very strong moats in that region through, you know, supply, demand, etc. I think, you know, you absolutely have to, you know, set up an incentive for, you know, your truly high performers, which is over and above just the, you know, normal, you know, performance stuff that we do. Long answer to a simple question.
No, but interesting. I'm going to take you back to one statement you made about founders and key employees having variable component, and it has to be top down, right? But I'm going to deep dive here, Rajin. There is, why do you think founders or key employees, right, should have variable component, considering they will have so much equity, you know, already in the company?
Yeah, see, I think it's very important in the context of, you know, founders and key employees, for multiple reasons. I think the most obvious one, is that, you know, equity is a long-term incentive versus, you know, variable pay is a short-term incentive, right? And you have to manage both the short-term and the long-term, right? The second is, I think founders and many key employees or key hires actually take meaningful pay cuts. I mean, founders, of course, are, you know, going after the larger dream of building a, you know, very, very large company. But, you know, still, you know, I think you know, they're often on, you know, very modest salaries, right? Because, you know, they recognize that every, you know, additional hire, key hire that they can make in lieu of the compensation that they're giving up maybe actually helps the company accelerate faster towards its vision. So, you know, there has to be some way at a, you know, more structural level to actually even for founders, you know, make sure that they're rewarded if the company does really well, right? So let's say that there was a, we'll come to it, you know, in terms of tools, let's say there was an annual plan and let's say the founder has, you know, beaten the annual plan. I think it's perfectly reasonable to have payout set up for founders as well. These conversations are very important to have very early in the company's journey, right? And how do you have a conversation with a key hire saying that, hey, listen, you know what, 40% of your CTC or 30% of your CTC is going to be in variable compensation when you don't yourself have, you know, variable compensation, right? I think you have to walk the talk in every respect, right? So it aligns everyone. I think it's just very simple. It's very clean, helps manage short term and long term. And it also it forces everyone in the org then to actually spell out what their goals are, right? If you have a performance management system in place, then everyone will be very clear on what are the goals that we have as an organization, what are the measurable, you know, targets that we are driving towards. Because basis those measurable targets, then you're going to actually pay out something. Right? So it forces clarity. It forces clarity for founders, key hires, and then obviously down to the individual contributor level as well.
Great. Interesting. So pivoting from the topic of why we need PMS, right, to the topic of how do we implement a good PMS process? Because, you know, we've seen there are so many different kind of tools and framework available in the market, right? And sometimes it can get very confusing. So in your opinion, what would be some of these tools that a startup can look at?
I mean, I don't want to complicate. I think tools. Let me frame it more in terms of the key processes, and then I think there's, you know, the software or, you know, the more tools part of it, right? First and foremost, you know, if you don't have a process in place, software is going to help you, right? So let's first start with the basics of, you know, what are the processes you should set up, right? I think the most obvious one is what's the annual plan. The reason the annual plan is important is it actually the founder and, you know, the board actually then align very clearly on, you know, what is the company driving towards over the next 12 months. I think it ties very closely into, you know, whatever incentive and performance management plan you design, by the way. Because another thing that I've seen in, you know, companies is, you know, they create an incentive and then they change the incentive, you know, 3 months later or 6 months later, right? It just creates havoc. Because, you know, people running towards a certain, you know, incentives drives behaviors in some ways, right? Culture also drives behaviors, but incentives drives behaviors. If you have one incentive for 6 months and another incentive for 6 months, you know, people's behaviors just keep changing, right? It just confuses everyone around them. So I think an annual plan is very important because then it's clear 12-month view of what the company is trying to achieve. And then basis that 12-month view, you can actually design all of the performance indicators and incentives that you would then cascade down, starting from the top all the way through down to the last person in the org. I think the other thing is, you know, you have to pick one of the, you know, frameworks that are, you know, in vogue out there. I think Balanced Scorecard is one, and I encourage people to read, you know, some frameworks from the Balanced Scorecard in the, you know, podcast below. OKRs is another one which is very often used in the startup ecosystem. And actually, I'd like to call out the entire X to 10X team, Psyche, Neeraj, and others. They've been very kind to, you know, multiple companies in the ecosystem, including some in our own portfolio, to actually educate them on how to actually drive execution effectiveness through OKRs. And, you know, OKRs is very simple, right? There's objectives, there's, you know, key results that, you know, are measurable, that align to those objectives. So there is an annual plan. How does that annual plan then cascade down into, you know, what are people working towards in terms of objectives, and what are those key results that they are trying to drive, which are measurable and controllable in some ways? So OKRs is a great one. Balanced scorecard is a great one. I think there are, you know, a few more, you know, that people use. I think the other process that is, you know, absolutely important is reviews. And, you know, reviews linked to 360 feedback, you know, hopefully from, you know, my arguments above, I've made a case for why it should be more frequent rather than less frequent, because especially at a, you know, junior level, I think it really helps drive performance. I think these are the basic ones. I would say, you know, don't overcomplicate it. There should be an annual plan linked to the annual plan. There should be, you know, MIS statements that, you know, are available to both the board and as well as to each individual team, you know, individual within which is, you know, driving, you know, projects, so that, you know, everyone knows what, where they stand. And then figure out, you know, OKRs, balanced scorecard, one of these, and then of course, you know, family reviews.
Okay. So simplicity is the theme. I get it. But do you also feel that having a dedicated software, you know, which manages performance management system will help a team better than not having it?
See, in general, yes. I have seen some companies actually, you know, just develop something in-house and something, you know, simple. I think that's great. I think there are some, you know, softwares out there. I think you've spoken to a few companies you should reference. I've seen some companies use Excel. Now, Excel isn't great because, you know, it isn't a single store of, you know, truth. It's you know, files float around, people can modify data, whatever, right? But, you know, I mean, at an early stage, you should just assume that if you have one, you know, internal champion who's driving the overall, you know, performance management, you know, function, you know, they can manage, you know, all of this on Excel too. I don't think it is, I think it's about the process. It's not about the software. And if you can, you know, establish the process and, you know, make sure that people are, you know, tracking it. And if it's linked to payouts and incentives, I think absolutely people are going to be all the more interested in making sure that it's, you know, the single store of truth, right? So yes, software is helpful. We are a tech investor. So yes, of course, we believe in the value of software for a variety of reasons. But even in the absence of software, don't let it hold you back. Excel is, you know, not that bad.
I agree with you. I think Excel is great, comparatively cheaper also, and I think almost everybody knows how to use it. No, but I would like to call out one pitfall, Rajinder, from my personal experiences. There is this tendency of history getting lost many a time during transitioning, right? And standardization can be an issue because we all love to have our own version of Excel, right? I think one theme would be that we need to ensure that standardization is there, you know, on how we are measuring and what we are measuring, and also to ensure that you know, there is continuity of data. You know, we're not losing that. I think if you're able to crack those 2 points, Excel sounds great. But I think with a pinch of salt, that as we scale up, we should be open to having a tool in place. I think it's more user friendly as the number of employee goes up in the company. I think from my experience, I can definitely call out a lot of tools that a lot of companies use. I personally use some of them. I think top of my mind, SuccessFactors, Workday, DarwinBox are tools that larger companies use. A lot of larger companies also have their in-house tools. But I think smaller firms can stick to lean, light PMS systems like Zing HR, Keka, Zoho is a good tool, Synergita. I think we'll give some of those links.
That's helpful.
Great. So Rajinder, assuming that we have convinced most of our listeners and founders to have a PMS system in place, any last word of thought for people who are still not convinced?
I've clearly not done a good job if that's the case, but you know, I'll accept it. But you know, I'll say something very simple, right? I mean, performance management systems drive performance, and I don't think any founder is starting a company out there to not succeed and win. So if you want to drive performance, you have to have some version of a system in place. So let's look at any company that's gone on to become successful. There is absolutely 100% some version of a performance management system in place. The sooner you adopt it, the better it is for you, because you will be able to build a company that is aligned much earlier. I mean, in the first few months, you know, everyone is just hustling, trying to do something, right? But at some point, some structure needs to be put in place after you reach a certain size of, you know, number of employees, etc., right? So performance management systems have to drive performance. That should be the expectation going in. It's not a guarantee, but that should be the expectation. I think the second thing is, I think employees feel far more satisfied in a company where there is some version of a meritocracy, in addition to, of course, a great culture, right? And what better to, you know, judge a meritocracy than a performance management system? Without a system in place, I just shudder to imagine, you know, how people are interacting with their peers, their managers, their, you know, counterparts across functions, everyone kind of trying to push and pull to drive their objectives forward. I can't even imagine, right? I've been fortunate to work in organizations where I've always felt that, you know what, there's a high degree of clarity around what we're going after. And I think the system is largely, you know, a signal of that. And I'll close by saying that, you know, if you have a high performing org, if you have you know, employees who are, you know, feel like there is a meritocracy that they're part of, and, you know, that they're, you know, success can be successful at, I think eventually you will end up building a fantastic organization. Like, your best performers will never leave. Your worst performers will very quickly figure out that, you know what, this is not the right place for me. And every single, you know, new employee that you're trying to convert to join your company, or every campus hiring program that you run, or every, you know, lateral hire that is, you know, difficult to convince, will, when they are doing their reference checks on you, find out that, hey, you know what, this company actually walks the talk, under promises, over delivers on compensation and incentives, and is a meritocracy. If I were a founder, you know, it would make me very proud if someone, you know, came and told me that, you know what, I really want to join your company because of these reasons.
Great. Thank you, Rajender, for your thoughts and inputs. Really enjoyed being a part of this session, and hopefully our listeners find this helpful. And we hope to come back to you with more such sessions in the future. Thank you from our end.
Thanks, Rupali. Appreciate it. And thank you, Saloni, for setting this up.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in. For more Matrix Moments episodes, you can head to www.matrixpartners.in/blog. You can also follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube for more updates.